Hey.
Hi.
Yo, how are you?
I'm okay. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Do you know what it is?
What?
I was just thinking to myself, literally, I last saw you a month and 3 weeks ago, and we just touched on Acid Joan on the podcast one time, like as a guest, and here we are.
Honestly. And literally, I feel like we were just having like banter and talking about the podcast, and I didn't think it would be as soon, but I'm glad it has.
Same, because you know, people kept telling me, I want to hear you on a podcast, and I said, I've got a friend that does a podcast, I might as well jump on, and I like the topic she does, so we'll see.
All of you here, and I'm so certain that everybody listening is going to be as blessed. Because I've had conversations with you, and I know that there's so much insight that can be picked. And I feel like every time we're speaking, we're also on like different sides of the spectrum, which is amazing because I guess we're able to, I don't know, challenge each other and just see different opinions.
Yeah,
So
I'm always playing devil's advocate for whatever
you
reason.
are. You are. Okay. So we'll just get right into it. For those that are listening, welcome back to Inner Thoughts with M. Joining me today is a very special person. I'm honestly calling everybody special all the time, but it's because we are all special. We are all special. And so, you know what? I'll just let my guest introduce himself.
Well, for those listening, I'm Timothy Jackson Obor. Different people call me whatever name they're comfortable with, but you can just call me Tim Obor Jack, whatever works, whatever's short. Yeah.
Okay.
Short, brief
Okay.
introduction. You know that means if you're going to say a story, you might as well begin with your name. That's it for me.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true though. Today's topic is something that's very dear to both of us from the last conversation that we had.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping it will be dear to the people that are listening as well. And yeah, we're going to be discussing expectations versus reality, adulting edition. And
101.
I feel like this topic is so broad. I feel that you could talk about it in terms of people, relationships, work, but I feel that we're in a position to best speak about it from just the adulting journey and just what our expectations were of ourselves, or just how like life would be and where we are now.
Yeah.
And what life is, and just everything that comes with it, and the challenges that we're facing, and the things that we just have to deal with. So, I'll just go ahead and put you. I'll just throw you in the deep end.
Already.
I'm just going to start. Okay. So, Timothy,
Yes.
what were your expectations prior to, say, 19 years old? And what are some of the expectations that you have now? And has there been a stark difference in terms of those expectations and what reality is, or what you think reality will be?
Well, let's date back in time. Here's 10, 9-year-old me in a family full of girls with one older sister
Okay.
in probably high school at the time, I imagine. And my mind at the time was like I was an only child because I just tend to have this imagination for 5 minutes, 10 minutes a day about what life would be as an adult.
Yeah.
About me living this lavish life where no one would be telling me what to do and what not. But then from an innocent childish perspective at that moment in time. And then here comes 18, 19-year-old me, where I'm going into uni, in a country far away from my parents, where I'm seeing them once or maybe not even in a year. And I'm thrown in the deep end of this thing called expectations versus reality, where I come to terms with oftentimes some people's expectations are self-projected. And we take on these pressures, and that somehow predicts our reality, which shouldn't be the case. And touching back on just what I just said about oftentimes with self-projections, take it from this perspective. When you're growing up, your parents look at you And I would like to imagine, in some sense, they see themselves. Thereby, they have these expectations of you and what you should shape up to be. On one hand, you're living life and they don't necessarily choose your friends. Somehow you go to school and begin to start choosing your friends and whatnot and the people you rub shoulders with. And in that same breath, these very people as well have their own expectations towards you. For example, here's devil's advocate. I'm in a room and person A says, I expect Timothy to be this. Similarly, someone walks in the room and says, I expect Jackson to be this and I expect a boy to be this. Now, if you've noticed, these are three different people, but one person as well. But three different people having their own expectations of who I should be.
But people are multifaceted. So in that very context, what I think of you is so different from what, say, your roommate thinks of you or your parent thinks of you.
Exactly.
But I think, like, in my opinion, I think what ought to matter is what do you think of yourself, you know?
But then it takes a realization for you to fully know yourself or be on a journey. I don't believe you can fully know yourself, especially at this
age. Yeah, I think we keep learning, like different things about ourselves.
Exactly, we keep learning, we keep unlearning certain things, especially now where you just have to adapt to situations. So the way I look at it is this. Whereas the world has an expectation of who I should be, especially even as a black man, when I step into a room and there's mirrors in this room, there's mirrors at a 45 degree angle, a 90 degree angle, a 360 if your head can turn that far. And do I resonate or do I identify with the person in the mirror looking back at me? And if I don't, that means I'm living a lie. Thereby, I've let expectations from external people and the pressures of society determine who I am. And I'm not living my reality, but I'm living a farce, a facade.
Yeah.
So I'm in this constant battle of life, expectation, and reality.
I feel like in terms of just like my own experience, I think that oftentimes what I've experienced is I'm not sure I can say that my expectations of myself or that other people have of me, it's a facade. But sometimes I've been caught at cross ends of, am I able to meet the very expectations that even I set out for myself?
Mm.
And just the fear of failure, and even not even just the fear, because fear of failure is you've tried. No, you haven't even tried, but you're afraid to just fail.
It's just that inner voice telling you.
Exactly. Yeah. But actual failure, so like stark rejections from different people, when the only person that's banking on you is, say, your parents or yourself or even your friends, but trying to make your dreams come true or the expectations of that you have of yourself turn into actual reality, it's proving difficult or even impossible, and you keep going at it, but reality doesn't seem to match this idea or this ideal that you have made up. That for me has been the greatest conflict that I've had just with this adulting journey, because I feel like when I was 16, 15, heck, I feel like even when I was maybe even 8 years, from when I was 8, I knew what I thought. I thought I knew what I wanted to do with my life. I thought it was as simple as, This is a school I want to go to. This is a university I want to go to. I want to study this. When I study this, I'm going to be this. I'm going to be that. And the thing is, because I think I was very outspoken about my dreams and my hopes, my parents listened. And so they held onto those dreams and hopes for me. And as time evolved, I've learned that I'm different. I mean, some of my dreams, many of them are probably the same, but
in a different light, you're looking at it from a different lens.
Exactly. And so it's just one of those, it's hard out here on these Trust streets. it's so hard just trying to become the person that we want to become. And it's not even one of those things where I'm just like, I'm trying to cry about it. But there's a thin line between realizing that, oh my God, I really thought this is where I would be right now, and this is actually where I am. and genuinely becoming disillusioned and just angry with yourself and just the world, basically, for just how harsh and cruel it can be, or just even unfair, one might say. So I feel like for me, what I'm trying to kind of sort out or deal with my mind and reconcile is how to retain my expectations, the ones that I've made for myself, without the pressures of everybody else, and still keep motivated despite what reality seems like. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, I mean, 100%. My question to you is, do you believe life is a triangle in some sort?
Triangle how?
It's like, well, this is an example, but a bit off course. It's like, if you're starting a business, you've got three variables. You've got good, quality, and cheap. And you can only have two at a time. Meaning, if you want the good and the cheap, it won't be quality. And if you want quality and good, it won't come cheap or fast. Now, in retrospect to what we're speaking about, imagine your triangle's literally drawn up and you've got life, reality, and expectations. If you're at a constant battle of you're managing expectations, but in the same breath trying to live this thing called life, are you living the reality in who you could be? Or do you hold on to reality and life and let expectations be? It's a question that most people haven't really tried answering, and mostly because it just opens up this Pandora box and you're like, where'd we go from here? Because I definitely understand what it means to have had expectations growing up, and you get to a level and you're like, well, what next? Because for me personally, when I was younger, probably six, seven, I remember I was in the hospital and I said to my mom, I want to be a doctor. Then when I got to high school, when I tell you, it shifted drastically. I hated chemistry. I can't lie to you. I could try doing biology. It was all right. I could do physics. But then sciences in general just wasn't for me. And then I remember I said to them, okay, after here comes, I've finished my O-levels, I'm going to A-level. And it's now, what are you doing? What combination are you doing? And here's me saying, oh, I'm doing Meg or PCB, because I'm thinking, yeah, it's the in thing. Every one of my friends is doing it. But then I never truly asked myself, is this what you want to do? And that was mostly because I virtually didn't know what I wanted to become afterwards. So it took, basically my mom said, my dad was like, oh, do what you want to do. So I got to high school, this is year 12. Math, oh my days, it was a mother.
I can relate on such deep levels.
And then here I'm doing physics. It's just, oh my God. And then in that, I'm somehow doing economics as well. So I get to year 13. I drop math. I pick on business. Bear in mind, this is my final year. It's make or break now. And then we're having a conversation. My dad is like, oh, what do you want to become? So I'm saying to him, I want to be a software engineer, but he's telling me, oh no, you should probably do civil. And my mom was like, because my mom was saying to me, are you sure you want to be a coder for the rest of your life? And I said, well, no. But then what I didn't realize in that moment, it was a turning moment, because my mom had literally observed me for the longest time, and she said, you're going to business economics at uni. And for a lot of people, they'll say, oh, if our parents detected the course we're doing and now we don't feel that way anymore. I can absolutely confirm to you, I'm a 100% finance man and I enjoy it every single day.
But you're probably an outlier.
So it's just one of them ones where I just came into it and I just saw all my expectations shift. And then when I finally got to my 20s, 21 now, I'm thinking, the only expectation I have of myself, I initially saw myself as going to final year and I have a job offer just waiting for me. So it's just me getting that fast class. Boy, was I wrong. 2020 came in with COVID and I had to go back to the drawing board. I'm getting job rejections here and there. I'm applying. I've got the grades. I've got the charisma for an interview. I'm getting it. Do you know what I mean? I totally disregarded the competition in the job market, especially in my sector. And then here comes, I've sat down and the reality is I've got about 18 rejections and I'm thinking, what's next? What's happening? And then I phone my mom and I'm like, mom, this adult life isn't working out. Where's the reset button? Can I go back to being 16 again?
To having hopes and dreams and not having to put variables with those hopes and
dreams. It was mostly, I'm supposed to do that. And if it doesn't work out enough, it has to be that. But then
I either do it or I die.
Oftentimes we don't give ourselves reservations. So I read something somewhere, it said, rejoice in the rejection because every rejection brings you closer to the future. And I said, what does this even mean? And then in the same breath, it said, if you feel like you've arrived, arrogance is sure to follow. And it made so much sense. I sat down and thought about a lot of people that have supposedly arrived and the amount of arrogance they've had. And I'm thinking, maybe this is just God humbling me and just making me live in that moment, because you never get grace for tomorrow, but rather the day you're living in. Thereby, people say, live it, take every day as it comes. And right now, it makes so much sense. And I'm like, I'm just enjoying the journey. Sure, I have expectations, but I'm managing them.
Yeah, I think that, do you think that the expectations that we have of one another or of ourselves, what do you think is the baseline for these expectations? What do you think influences them? Because I think that, and I think because now I'm 21 and I've done some growing up from when I was like 16, I'm starting to condition my mind to not think in the first person always, because in my brain the world revolves around me, and and I guess it's just basically most people's brains. You know, when you're thinking about things, you think about them from the perspective of your own mind, of how you perceive it. So how we'll remember events, or when you walk into a room, you see the room from your eyes. So you might think that this person's looking at you or this person's doing this and that, but like from your perspective, basically, we are so self-aware of ourselves. And I guess it's innate because, well, we're in our bodies. So I guess what I'm constantly trying to tell myself is, you're not the only person that is applying for that job or that making the application. You're not the only person in this low class. You're not the only person who's had the dreams that you want to basically achieve. And I feel like when I was 16, although I was aware that probably I was not the only person achieving these dreams, I believed myself to be some sort of special individual that for some reason I didn't think anything would be hard. Does that make sense? Like I didn't put into consideration probably rejections and just having to put myself back up. And then when I come uni, things are absolutely different and life is different. And my expectations of myself are seemingly not meeting what's happening on ground. And so I feel like I had a moment where I started to even doubt myself. Like, Timothy, I was just like, honestly, I think I'm absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm going for these things that I think deserve a person as amazing as I am. Exactly. But these things or these people or these companies or whatever do not seem to think that I am as deserving as I deemed myself to be. And so I think it takes a lot of strength to come back, especially from like just a rejection and especially a rejection that attacks you so directly. You know
what I think is this, yeah?
Yeah.
We're all human beings, but then as human beings, we're so insidious. And it's just basically this. If you can't manage your open door, how will you manage your closed door? Which in other words just means we tend to have, as you said, everything revolves around us. And that's just true. People, you can't dispute that. But then you just need to be consciously aware of it. Whereas it's subconscious. But then it takes you to unlearn and learn certain things and just generally be open-minded to understand that people do have different perspectives. And that's why when I walk into a room, and normally when I have a conversation with someone, I give people two different perspectives. And everyone's like, well, what's your conclusion? What side are you leaning towards? And I say to them, none. And everyone asks me why. And I say, occupational hazard. Because for me, I'll much rather see things from two different lenses than one. Because when you see things through one, then you're just walking a mile in your own shoes and not thinking about, wait, hold on. what if someone is thinking like this? What if someone's thinking like that? So ultimately, in that moment, whatever decision you make is solely yours and how you see it. A total disregard to people. But then again, it doesn't mean if, oh, I'm not, I wouldn't want to call it emotional intelligence because that would just be giving it such a broad word. But then it's just normal. So I don't think people should beat themselves if, oh, right, this person thinks I'm self-centered. Well, you are self-centered, but you can definitely beat it. If you're conscious and know, oh, this is the person that I am, I consciously want to change, because I believe the person I was yesterday isn't the person I am today, because a lot happens in 24 hours. We consume a lot of information, and that information either makes or breaks you or changes you for the better.
Yeah. I think that for me also, something that's really helped me is I like to plan. I like to tick boxes. I'm those, you know, those people who go to class and they have like a list of things they're supposed to do. I am those people. I like to check the boxes. I like, it's crazy, but if I want to get something done, I really want it done. But obviously, like throughout your day, there's like different things. So you might want to get something done at 9 and something comes up like abruptly and you can't get it done at 9 and you have to get it done at 10. And I think in a way, although it's seemingly a small like scenario, like just to-do list and whatnot, for me, it's kind of helped to just keep as open a mind as I do for my to-do list for my own life. So kind of like setting out what I want and obviously working towards it. But also keeping open-minded and just knowing that at the end of the day, I can only control exactly. so much.
And as you said, you have to keep open-minded, because the truth of the matter is the reality that you expect is second dream, because it's in your head. It's second dream. Because not everything goes full circle, and that's why we've got semicircles. And once you come to terms with that, you then appreciate that I've got a to-do list. To be, I've got to do 5 things in a space of, let's say, 3-4 hours, and then you get a call, and that call automatically shifts your day. Or you go on an app like Twitter, you read a thread, and your day's just gone like that. So,
do you think that basically who your friends are and just the things that they're doing, or just people that you see in your circle or just on social media? Do you ever like juxtapose, like just have moments, even if they're split moments, where you just juxtapose your life versus theirs? And do you have moments where sometimes you feel like you're very proud of your friend, they're doing so well, but you kind of ask, what are you doing with your own life? Have you ever had 100%. A moment like that?
Especially because I remember I had a conversation with someone and we were both applying for this job. And I said to them, imagine one of us got the job before the other. It would take an extra amount of strength. And I mean strength deep down for you to be genuinely happy for me without thinking, wait, why didn't I get the job? And for me, I play the same scenario when it comes to, let's say, the job sector. I'm speaking like man's got a job, but anyway, let's say when it comes to the job sector, and then you've gone for an application, it's you and a couple of white youths, and you're thinking, I didn't get the job because, oh, I'm black, so thereby, because I'm ethnic minority, I didn't get in. But I keep asking people, imagine that wasn't the case. And just because this person is white, you think he's used his white privilege, but say he worked 2 times as hard as well to put himself in that position, and in that occasion, he's better than you. Then what? Do you then feel ashamed for saying, oh, it's because I'm black? So when does it become, where do you draw the line between, I'm genuinely happy for you, as much as it's killing me, I will clap for you? Or do you sit down in self-pity and let your self-pity turmoil into jealousy?
Honestly, I feel like it takes practice. So I've had very many scenarios where, honestly, I keep telling people that I'm so privileged that the people around me and just my support system is very genuine. And I thank God for that so much. I've had scenarios where my friends and I have gone for the same things, like literally even passed through to interview stage, and we're the same, we're literally going against each other sort of thing. And those times are trying, because either way, if you both want it really bad, somebody will get hurt. Like, if you don't get something that you want, of course you're going to get hurt. I think it's just about being genuine, like, knowing that let the better man get the job, you know? And obviously you'll be sad, so sulk about it for a while, but you move. It's just one of those things, like, you keep moving. Like, are you good? But I feel like it takes practice, Timothy. Like, the very first time you confront a situation like that, it's not easy. Like, jealousy is not, it's not, I don't think it's a feeling that is so far from us.
It's very close. It's like, I like to compare it to love.
Yeah.
I keep telling people, love and hate are a similar emotion. It's just a coin flip.
That's true. Such a thin line.
Similarly between happiness and jealousy. Because, you know, people that's, let's say I've got a new car. Everyone's like, oh, no, it's been financed. I've got a new watch. Oh, this and this. But bear in mind, everyone claims to know the formula, but they're not using it. So why is it working for me and not for you? You claim to know my formula rather than just knowing man's doing well, man's making it. Therefore, be happy for me. And even just to touch on what you said about a friendship level, as you grow up, you've got to realize that some friendships, I wouldn't say die out. Well, they do die out, but then it evolves in a sense, because as you grow older, your realities change. You could find, we used to be friends because we saw each other typically 9 to 5. We saw each other every week, so we're close. And now that we're maybe in different countries or in different headspace, then we're not as close. But it doesn't mean there's animosity there. Do you know what I mean? It just means we need to appreciate. As we grow older, as we adult, sometimes it's A, we put distance between brethren to get what we need to do done, or B, we've just outgrown each other. And that's why I said.
Or C, we're still really good friends and amen, we're building each other.
Amen to that. But then, particularly, I'm just focusing on us outgrowing each other. And I've outgrown you. So why is it? And here's my problem with us, for example, people in general. I won't even narrow it down, but people in general is we tend to min-mark each other. And it varies from society to society. Whereas,
tell me more about the
min marking is this.
I don't know
that. If I have, let's say, this opportunity, and I don't necessarily have the skill set for it, I'm 100% sure I know 3 or 2 people in my contact list that can do it better than I can. But no. I'm thinking if I bring them in, then they're going to do better than me, then automatically take my job. So it's this constant competition. And I'm thinking, why are we in a constant competition where we should be just helping each other?
Yeah. I think we find it easier to help each other when we're already at a point of advantage. Yeah, but then
for how long will you use that excuse? It's like saying, I'm waiting for X amount of finance to start this business. But the question is, how long are you going to wait? Because you're going to say, I'm waiting for, let's say, £5,000 to kick off. You're going to get that £5,000 and you're saying, maybe I need 10. If I get to 10, then it becomes, if I get to 12. So you're procrastinating. Oh, for me, it's where do you draw the line? How long are we going to say, oh, if I need to get there first, then pull you?
I think also we just have to kind of take it in that our journeys are 100%, different.
100%.
And kind of have to, I think it also ties back to the whole, you know, your friends seem to be doing better than you're doing at that moment in time, or they're doing more, or maybe you're even working at something, but it hasn't yielded yet. I think it comes back to just the fact that our journeys are different, and maybe from understanding that, we can move into a space where we can facilitate and help those around us to prosper, even when we're not prospering. Does that make sense? Like, just kind of be able to, you know how they say, have people in your life who can mention your name in a room full of opportunities. For a person to mention your name, many times people find it easier to mention your name when they also have opportunities lined up for them or things that are happening for them. And the hard part is getting to a space where even when you're the one losing out on something, or even when there's nothing going on for you seemingly, you're still able to, you know, give your friend that recommendation or mention their name or give them an opportunity that you think would suit them. I think it just goes back to, like, just, I feel like the genesis of everything that we're talking about, you know, being open-minded and reconciling everything that's happening with yourself, like having your expectations, but knowing that the world is going to throw different variables, and getting to a space where you're secure enough not to be jealous or be envious or even just unhappy when your friends are winning and you're not.
For me, it just typically revolves around patience. I keep telling people patience is a virtue. Never. It's like this.
It's hard.
Limitations 3:21 to 26, I think. This I recall in my mind, therefore I have hope. And in having that hope, can you sit down and be patient? Because it's like, I think people that journal will probably relate to this. So say you journal. I personally don't. I keep things upstairs in my head. But say you journal, yeah? And fast forward maybe 6 months. So the last 6 months, you're in a bad space, but you're journaling it down, you're journaling it down. Then 6 months later, you get to a space where, oh, hold on, let me see what I wrote in January. Or let me see what December was saying. So you go, you scroll back and you can't really identify what was going on. You're like, wait, this was me. What was happening? And then, because oftentimes, when we look back, we can see how far we've come. But the sad truth is when we look forward now, we don't typically see how far we've come or where we're going. Because when you're looking forward, and in the moment you're in, but you're looking forward, you're thinking, oh, things are not working out. Should I just stop now or what? But the truth is just keep going. And if you journal, that's when you you just see how fundamental your journey has been. And especially now for people that have imposter syndrome, when some the advice people keep giving them is, oh, just what you've achieved and remind yourself that you're well within your right where you are.
Affirmations.
So basically positive affirmations. And generally, it's all a mindset, because everything centers around basically your mental health and how you just perceive.
That's true.
And especially now when the stigma is being rewritten, because obviously there was a stigma. Oh, it's probably this
witchcraft.
Yeah, it's probably witchcraft. It's probably a white man's disease. It's probably that gender, this gender. But typically, everyone goes through it. Everyone goes through it. And then you're allowed to have moments where you reset and say, listen, I need distance between bedrooms. I need to choose me for once. It's allowed to happen. It's healthy. Do it. But then...
I think something that you say that's very key is just the ability to choose yourself.
Yeah. I can't stress that
enough. I think it's a hard... It's a hard part. It's a hard concept.
Yeah, it's a hard concept. Because sometimes you're thinking, oh, maybe I'm just being selfish. But at the end of the day, if... your friends are the people I think they are, then they will understand, because we have to get to an age where we pick us first, but then we pick our friends' well-being first as well. It's like when I pick up the phone, say, well, the other day I had a 1-hour-30 conversation with a friend I hadn't had a deep conversation with in a long time. And she picked up the phone and said, I know a lot is going on around you, but I've got to ask you first, how are you? And the baddest is, whenever you ask someone, how are you, we've been so trained to say, I'm fine.
I'm fine.
But inside, we're actually not fine. No one knows how to say I'm not fine. Because when I say I'm not fine, I have to go into why you're not fine.
I have to explain what's going on. Sometimes I don't even know what's going on. So I don't want to enter that. Yeah.
How do I then start unpacking and uncompartmentalizing what's going on? But then sometimes, because... She just did something that no one had ever done towards me speaking to me over the phone. It's normally, boom, boom, boom. Oh, are you fine? Yeah, good. So, you know this thing we're supposed to do? It's normally that sort of conversation, yeah? Where people are bang, bang, bang about their business. But she said, before I ask you about something else, what's going on in your life? Because it looks like a mess has been happening. And I sat down and I was like, whoa, I need to then transfer this to my other friendships. And before I go about what I want, let's start from how are you? Or a simple catch-up call.
What's going on with you?
How's life? How's this adult thing going? Because generally, whether you're 28, 25, 30, you're still going through a bit of learning as well.
Always. Even if you're 100.
Even if you're 100. And for me, that's why I say, as you grow older, for me, my mom just tends to become my best friend, because my mom and my sister were back technical difficulties.
But yeah, you were saying, go on.
Yeah, so basically, what was that going on about? Hold on.
Just basically, how when you're, how you've grown older, how your mom and your sisters so are becoming.
As I've grown older, I just tend to rely on them more. And that's not because no one's there for me. I've got, I'd love to say I've got a great team. Big up, guys. You know yourselves. Boom, boom, boom. But they tend to just draw from either what they've gone through, what their friends have gone through. And we just have a broader conversation. So it stopped being this whole, they're your parents sort of conversation, the older sibling, to just, we're now siblings, we're kicking it. We're talking about life. And they definitely appreciate being brought in like that. Obviously, people's parents are different. I can't speak for everyone. But then for me, I appreciate that every step of the way.
I think it's about, regardless of whether it's your family, I'm very, like, for me, family is 100%. It comes first. But it's obviously different for different people. But you just need to have a person or people in your life that are able to hold you down, to check in on you, to ask how you're doing. People that you can be honest with and feel vulnerable enough to be with, if that makes sense.
Exactly. One of the things I'm trying to challenge myself now is to check on my friends a lot more often. Because one thing I've noticed is a lot is said during conversation. And we tend not to pay attention. Sometimes people got silent cries and we're not hearing them. We're thinking, oh, she's bunt. But I think as life has shown me in the past 6 months, a lot is said in conversation. And when Malcolm X was talking about, you need to sit down and listen, even Tupac Shakur was talking about it. Well, now I'm beginning to want to listen, because I've always hid behind, oh, I'm a poor texter and whatnot. But then it's becoming an excuse. I've got an excuse now. I've got to make time. And that's what growing up is about. You have to come to terms with managing your time. Make time for people. Because even if you say, I'm going on about my life, you're going to have to make time for someone, because you need to talk to someone. Unless you're talking in the mirror, but you can't do that forever.
It's not even effective.
Exactly.
Can only go so much.
Can only go so much speaking to yourself in the mirror. Imagine that conversation. Imagine the conversation with me in the mirror. Hey, you, it's Timothy. Yeah. Now you look good today. Anyway, 5 minutes of shallow me, but yeah.
I think that at the end of the day, I like this whole the topic that basically we've done today, the whole expectations versus reality, because we're all experiencing this, like, regardless of where we are, whether you're 40 or, you know, 20 or 16, we're literally, it's not even like just ourselves, so it's not just like first person, like thinking about yourself, but we've even had expectations of our friends, of our parents, of just people around us, of our society, that has fallen short of our wanting, or that's just different from what we thought it would be. And the crazy part is, you know, when you're experiencing something or just going through something, at that very moment, you think you're the only person that's going through that or suffering at that very moment.
For sure. Even just to touch on what you're saying, it's like how I normally have conversations with people about, oh, imagine this. Imagine Dave's 22, Dave the rapper. Imagine this soccer player is 21. And he's making more peas than I'm making. I'm just at uni. And I say to people, if you monitor their careers, like even when those careers come to standstill, or when they have a dip in form, they're going through shit in their lives. Because as much as they're a public figure, in the background, they're dealing with their own demons. And then you have people, footballers publicly coming and saying, listen, I was dealing with mental health in this occasion and that occasion when this happened. And then we're like, rah, okay. It's because we'll put people on a pedestal, and by putting them on a pedestal, we expect them to be like this, the strongest people around. Whereas if I'm not feeling well, why do you deserve to earn that money and I don't? Because so we have converted our expectation to, I need more money to be happy, which isn't the case. there's lots of rich people that are unhappy. And then people keep throwing the joke of, oh, I'd rather cry in a Bentley, Range Rover. And I say to them,
I had this conversation last week. It was crazy.
Yeah, and I say to them, as much as you're throwing that conversation, because personally, I would love to do that as well, but there has to be more. Sit down and dig deep. Think about it. Deep it. If money was the root of all happiness, then people that are rich would be happy.
I think good riddance, we should just like bid good riddance to expectations of like just people's people having it all together. This notion of you have it together, we should just get it. I feel like it should just be thrown away, because what is having it all together? And I think it just keeps us in a box where when we are apparently not within this norm of having it together, then we lose ourselves.
And that's why I said at the beginning, we're a constant battle of life, the reality in which we're living in, and expectations.
And expectations. I like the triangle. I love that.
Beautiful triangle. You can only have two at a time. You have to pick wisely. And sometimes you're at crossroads of, am I supposed to be there for a friend? Or
should I pick myself?
Should I pick myself? And it's a tough, tough decision. Believe me, it's a tough decision. Because what we don't, I think we ignore the fact that we see a lot on a daily. And for a lot of people, well, let's say people that are in war-ridden places where there's lots of war and whatnot, and people that are seeking asylum, they've seen things that we haven't necessarily seen. And then it's just us that we've probably grown up with everything we virtually want, where our parents have made sacrifices or not. And we still have something we're going through, be it on a family level or just be on a personal level, coming to terms with who am I when I look in the mirror. I want to identify this person that's looking back at me. I want to be comfortable in my own skin. Because if these whole expectations that society throws on us, or you've got to have made it by this age. So
we're struggling
to just have a touch of it, just grace it a bit.
I think also the fact that we've been provided with so much. You know how they say, or not they say, it's written in the Bible. So whom much is given, much is expected. Mm. And I think that whether you're spiritual or not, that's always at the back of your mind, that this investment has been made in you. You'd like to do better, or at least be able to give yourself something that's similar. And as the years go by, or the days, you know, just flash off and tick, it's daunting when you compare yourself to probably your parents and what they were doing at your age, or seemingly what you think you ought to have achieved, you know?
You know, I asked my mom the other day, how do you pay all these taxes, pay for tuition, do this, and still keep it together? Because I'm thinking, you know, when you're broke and every bill seems to be coming at that moment. Yeah, small poverty can make
you cry.
Every bill that's coming at that moment, you're like, what one?
When you have money, the bills don't show up.
When you have money, the bills don't show up, but the bills always show up at the end of the month, and you're thinking, what one for the bill? And I think Biggie said it best, more money, more problems. But then in that moment, you're like, oh, no, Puff Daddy, I'm chilling, me. And then boom, it comes. And I said to her, how do you manage it? Like, how do you even save? Where's the money? Like, what pockets do you put in? I understand or appreciate people just make investments or whatnot, but then what investments? Because when you make an investment, your cash is not liquid. And what happens when you need liquid cash? So I said, how do you do it? She's like, it's just adulting.
I feel like something that my dad and my mom really have just taught me, I think because of how transparent they've been with just basically their own life and just bringing me up, I've learned that no one has it together. Nobody know. You know, when we're growing up, we idolize our parents. Yeah. You know?
Then you grow up and realize they're human beings.
Exactly. And yet they are. They're still figuring it out, like, day by day. And I guess, if anything, we should find solace in the fact that they figured it out, kind of. Yeah. You're not absolutely horrible. You know, you came out all right. Like, it's crazy. But we can't have a plan for it always. We sometimes have to learn as we go. So I think it's the hope that, like we say, just having an open mind, having those goals, working towards them, making time for the people that you care for, and protecting your mind. I don't think there's like a recipe or like a an answer to just dealing with this whole life and adulting thing. I think, I don't know. I don't know what I think.
I think your mind has to arrive at your destination before your life does. And even Mark Twain wrote in a book and said, whenever you find yourself at the side of the majority, you need to pause. You need to take time and pause and reflect, because if you're just following the majority, then surely you're not thinking for yourself. You're just following the trend now.
True.
So thereby you're just existing.
Unless you came up with the trend, then that's different. But yeah.
Because even in one of these books, I've forgotten the title, I just remember the quote briefly. It basically says, beware of the fragile ego. That was just basically speaking about the law of envy and speaking about how we as human beings are naturally compelled to compare ourselves to others. And we continuously measure our statuses to people, levels, respect, attention, and what have you, so many. And I sat down, I just read that one line and I sat down and started thinking about how accurate it was.
Yeah, I'm literally thinking about it now as well, especially the part of just like not comparing ourselves to other people.
Yeah, but it's hard because people, imagine you're growing up and your mom's telling you, oh, that cousin is doing this. You're automatically going
to, automatically going
to want to compare yourself to that person. Or your friend says, my older brother's doing this, but let's say they're an adventure that you want to do. So you're going to compare yourself to that person.
I think it's a subconscious thing that we kind of have to, like you said, mindset. We have to train our minds to become aware of some of the things that we do that just work against us at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's all the time that we had for today. Honestly, Timothy, having you on here it's been crazy because I didn't think I'd think this much.
It's been a long time coming. Those are conversations with me. I leave you thinking.
Yeah, you do leave me thinking. And I feel like it's also because, just like the topic, it's dear to my heart because I think I've also been in the pits lately and just kind of trying to sort out my expectations and my reality, really. But thank you so much for just joining us and sharing with us and tuning in to Inner Thoughts with M, because I know you do listen and I appreciate that.
Vibes.
And I hope everybody that's listening to this enjoys it.
I'd definitely love to be back soon.
See you soon. Maybe we'll have a part 2.
I hope so.